To basically condense what Nicole Kidman says in her AMC intro, we go to movies to feel something. Now, in my opinion, one of the most important aspects of film is the ability to create catharsis, making us feel some desired emotion. Now, we go to rom-coms to live that sense of romance, comedies to make us laugh, dramas to make us cry, and ultimately horror films to scare us. Obviously, some more effective than others. However, there are many horror films that can create multiple emotions. We look at horror comedies, for example. What you don't always expect with a horror film is to become an ugly, crying, sobbing, hot-ass mess like I am every time I watch this week's film. It's no surprise that a horror film that is this masterful yet terrifying hails from South Korea. They know how to make a really good fucking film. Hi, I'm Paul.
Hi, I'm Pablo, and welcome to Scared Gay,
a horror movie podcast with a gay agenda. And today we're talking about South Korea's 2016 zombie classic, Train to Busan.
Choo choo, all aboard.
All aboard, motherfucker.
All aboard this train to Busy.
Bussy. Although, one thing, I just quickly, a little spoiler alert, as they're walking through the trains, anyone who's in the Bay Area, I, even like as a non-zombie, I can't open the doors that slide between the trains, so I don't blame.
Maybe you are a zombie.
Maybe.
Did you ever consider that?
No, I'm just really weak.
Dumb. Shut up. Oh my god. What a fucking fabulous film. Yeah, I love this film.
I'm so excited.
Oh, this is genius.
I think this is our first South Korean film.
I think so.
And I think our first zombie film.
Shut up. Is it? I don't know. We'll have to check, but like zombies are so, it's maybe because it's so much that I don't know, that's so wild if it is our first.
It might be. Yeah, whatever. Well, whatever.
I'm getting cheese fries. Whatever, I'm getting cheese fries. Okay, before we get into this film, because we have a lot to say, because yes. How was your life for horror movie this week, Paul?
Yeah, so you know how in Talk to Me, where someone gets, Sophie gets obsessed with, this hand and with that, it's just super invested in this, new thing in her life. Well, I stumbled upon a rabbit hole in TikTok of like chaotic HOA meetings.
Well, you send me that great one about Tila Tortilla.
Oh my god, Tila Tequila is back in, like, back online, I guess, and she's a total Trumper and everything, and she's a flat earther. So I don't like feel bad talking shit about her. But anyway, how is your life a horror film?
Well, I was thinking about this, and I think my life was a horror film. And the horror films are like the movie Old, the movie The Taking of Deborah Logan, that New Zealand film, Relic.
You're aging.
What I want to say is I'm fucking old as fuck. So here's why. I wanted to re-pierce my septum because I had it pierced about 10 years ago and then I took it out because of boxing. It was never healing because I kept, you're boxing, right? And I decided I'm going to pierce my ears as well. So I talked to a friend of mine who manages this really cool piercing tattoo shop. And I was like, great. But it's out in the East Bay. So we went all the way to Walnut Creek to go because he's awesome. So if you ever go, if you're in Berkeley or in Walnut Creek, go to Zebra Piercing and Tattoo. They have two locations. They're fucking awesome. And ask for Gabriel. Gabriel's the best. So anyway, I get there. Everyone getting pierced could have been my child. Ooh. It was a bunch of like 8-year-old girls, 11 and 12-year-old girls, and then me. I was the age of most of the parents there. And I'm like waiting because I'm like, oh, fuck. And wait, it was so funny, right? Because
wait, you said how old?
They how were old like are they? 8. Getting their ears pierced.
Oh, my God. That's oh, okay. Getting their ears pierced.
I Yeah. And then like older girls, like
I was thinking
15, getting septums and shit.
Because I was going to say there are 8-year-olds getting septum piercings or like a really super tatted up 8-year-old.
Oh, that would be fucking hilarious. But it was like wild. And I was like, oh, my God. And people were like, did you go to Claire's? And I was like, might as well, just because of the age. The place is great. The jewelry is great. It was awesome. I'm happy I did it. And I remember like I turned to like the person piercing me and I was like, hey, I just want to thank you for making the beginning of my midlife crisis the best so far. So thank you. And she just laughed. But yes, but now I have piercings again and I'm into it. I'm happy.
You look good.
Thank you.
This little septum. When you told me you got a, when you told me you got a piercing or something, I was like, oh no. Oh no.
Oh no. I know, right? No, but
where
like
is it? I'm just kidding.
Well, yeah, for sure. When it heals, I want to do like a kind of, I don't want to do the Soma pig boy ones. I want to do like kind of like a hippie ring type of thing. Like I have some ideas, like these really interesting jewelries. Like that's what I'm going for. So we'll see.
Oh,
we'll
see.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, okay. Let's dive into the film. Now, Pablo, when did you first see Train to Busan?
I saw it like, I didn't see it when it first came out. I probably saw it like in 2018, like when it first hit Netflix. I think it came to Netflix a couple, like a year or two after it was like released. That's when I watched it and I was like, whoa, this is amazing.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh my God, like super impressed by it.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I honestly, I think I saw this for the first time about 2 years ago.
Hmm.
I definitely, yeah, like could not have been more than 3 years ago because I was living in the apartment that I'm living in now. And I think I was actually listening to a horror podcast and they were about to cover it. So I wanted to watch it before. So
yeah,
I love this film. Famously, I am not a zombie movie film. I think maybe you and I've definitely talked about it off mic, but I don't know if I've ever really mentioned that on the pod, but I typically don't like zombie films, but this one is next level. Also, South Korea, they make some of the best fucking horror movies, like Tale of Two Sisters. I fucking love Gangnam Haunted Asylum.
Oh, that's so good.
There's so many good ones. The Wailing.
Have you seen Memories of Murder?
I have not.
Okay. Everyone, I highly recommend it. It's about South Korea's first serial killer. It is a drama, but like a crime drama. However, it is terrifying. It scared the shit out of me, like watching it. They did such a good job with that movie.
What's it called?
Memories of Murder.
Okay, cool. I'm just taking some notes.
South Korea has some, and then you know they have the other ones like Mother, I believe, is a South Korean film. They have some great ones.
Amazing. Yeah, but no, I'm excited to chat about this one. I think that there's a lot of really cool things for us to to dive into because this film is just, it's so meaty. There's so many layers to it. And
it fits together well.
It fits together. Yeah. It's super claustrophobic, but at the same time, it makes sense. I mean, for the most part, it's obviously a single location film, but it never really feels like it. Obviously, again, there are scenes where they're not on the train, but the vast, vast majority of the film takes place on the train. So I think it's, I cannot sing this movie's.
Oh my God.
Enough.
100%. Like when I watched it with Chris, like Chris couldn't even sit down. He's seen it before, but he couldn't remain seated because he's like, oh my God, this movie has so much tension. Like, it makes you so anxious. And we know what's going to happen, but he's like, ah! And that's the that's one of the things that's wonderful about this film, right? Is like, you're right. It is mostly a single location, but it doesn't feel boring. And it has a way of like utilizing the best of single location and the best of like chasing through various locations all at the same time. And I'm like, fuck, this is so good.
Oh, totally. And like, it's the pacing is perfect. I mean, it's a 2-hour film, but it doesn't feel like it. But the movie slows down in all the right moments for you to really sink in the themes of the movie. And then it picks up and is a fucking wild ride.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and there's, you know, a good amount of setup before we actually see the monster. But again, the monster is revealed pretty early on. And sometimes that can be a shitty choice for a movie. But in this type of film, like this film and 30 Days of Night, we talked about it too, of kind of seeing the monster early on, then you really get to like kick in the full gear.
Well, and then the other thing that's smart about this film is like, people make choices that mostly make sense. I understand some choices that you have to make for movie's sake, for dramatic sake. But even then, you're like, you're actually, the choices you made for dramatic sake actually get you more invested in the story rather than a lot of other films will try to make they'll have them make a choice for a dramatic sake. And you're like, it actually takes me away from the terror. It takes me away. And actually a lot of zombie films do that. This one doesn't. Right. And like you're screaming at the screen, but you're also like, but fuck, I would probably make that same decision. I think, I don't know. And I also like it just, it really seems like a very natural film in like how everyone goes about doing stuff. So I love
100%.
That. 100%.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So a little bit about this film. So I want to apologize. I am not a Korean speaker. I don't really speak Korean. Sounds like a beautiful language, but I don't speak it. So I'm going to pronounce as best that I can. I want to apologize for anybody's name that I have butchered. So sorry. I'm trying my best here.
I'm in the same boat as Pablo. No disrespect intended on us, our pronunciations. But, you know, we are two Californian boys.
100%. 100. Keeping it 100. All right. So this film was written and directed, directed by Yoon Sang-ho and written by Park Ju-suk. It was released on July 20th, 2016. And it was made on a budget of $8.5 million. And it hit a box office of $98.5 million. So it made $90 million. It made over like 11 times, almost 12 times what it costs. So yeah.
And to clarify, that is in US dollars.
Yeah.
That's just so everyone knows.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't even imagine how much it's made since then, because it is on everything and it is like on everyone's list to watch. It's just chef's kiss. So it's a pretty interesting cast. So let's see how we go. Again, I am so sorry. These are all spectacular actors, spectacular characters. Let's go through it. So the film stars Gong Yoo as Seok Woo, who is our main protagonist, and he is a fund manager whose wife left him because of his selfishness, and he is the father in this movie. We have Jung Yoo Mi as Seong Kyung, which is Sang Hwa's pregnant wife. So that's the pregnant woman in the film. We have Ma Dong Seok as Yung Sang Hwa, who is the husband of, you know, he's the husband. He's a big burly, which I like to think he was like a gangster, but now he's reformed. He's wonderful. Kim Soo-an as Soo-an, and he is the daughter of Seok Woo, and she just wants to go. It's her birthday, and she wants to go see her mom in Busan. Mm-hmm. We have Choi Wook-shik as Min Young-guk, who is a high school baseball player. We have Soo-hee as Kim Jin-hee, who is Young-guk's like admirer. She has a crush on him, or she's wants to date him or something. She's
they're in a relationship. They're in a situation. Situationship.
Ooh, digs. They're in a situationship. Yeah, for sure. And she's a lot more like, she's forward, she's all these things, right?
She's actually the actress, she's actually a former K-pop star.
Oh, you can tell. Yeah. I'm not surprised. She has that look. She's and gorgeous. That body. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Okay. We have Kim Ui Sung as Young Suk, or more like You Suk. He's okay.
Pablo.
He does suck. He sucks.
I know.
Young Suk sucks. Sorry. He's the like older business, like CEO guy. We have Choi Gui Hwa as the unhoused man. We have Jang Hyuk Jin as Ki Chul, who is the train attendant. We have Park Myung Sing Ko as Jang Gil, who is of the two elderly sisters, she's the youngest one. And then we have Yi Sung Jung as Ingil or Injil, who is the older sister, older of the elder sisters.
Yeah.
All right.
Good job.
Yeah.
Good
yeah.
Job, at least
if you're Korean, please let us know how to pronounce these names because we want to put some respect on these people's names and pronounce them correctly, but we tried our best.
All right. So let's go on some behind the scenes.
Let's go
a little backwards. So the film is based on an original story by Park Ju-suk and the director, Yeon Sang-ho. This is his first live action film. Previously, he was mainly just did like animated films. And in an interview, he actually said, I have a quote here, "I didn't choose this film as a way of adapting my image or in order to show a new side of myself. Instead, I chose it because it's the first zombie blockbuster in Korea, and I think it's meaningful to try new things in cinema." Which brings me to my next point. This is the first zombie blockbuster in Korea.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and I do like that he has an animation background. This is his first foray into, you know, live action, like directing. So he talked a lot about how like directing for an animated film is obviously a lot different than directing for a live action film. And I think this reads. I think that this it reads as a bit of an animated film. There's a lot of CGI in it, but it's good CGI.
It's done well. And 100%. Because they tried to do similar CGI in World War Z, which I actually like that movie, but the CGI didn't work as well.
Totally. And I had to Google it because I was, obviously there's stuff that is definitely CGI, but I had to Google it of like, do they use a lot of CGI? Because I would have thought some of this was definitely like practical. It looks really good.
Yeah.
So it holds a record in South Korea. It brought in 11 million moviegoers, the first film to do that. And at the time of when this trivia fact I found was posted, it was the 9th most successful Korean film in history. I'm sure it's, if it's not still the 9th, it's 10. It's still up there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was filmed over about 4 months, and Soo Ann, who I guess her name is Soo Ann, and then the actor's name is Soo Ann as well. But she said that
Can you say that in a Southern accent? Just anytime we talk about it, I'll be like, Soo Ann.
Soo-Ann.
Soo-Ann.
No,
thank you.
No, but it's like Soo-Ann or Soo-Ann. Soo-Ann.
Soo-Ann, yeah.
So Soo-Ann, she said that, you know, while we were on location, they had to do over 20 takes because the CGI, but then also, that work that they would do later, but also they ran into, you know, some focus problems. Gong Yoo, who, so hot. He's in Squid Game as well. So like I recognized him when I saw Squid Game, but just want to throw it out there. He's a very attractive man.
There's a good amount of really attractive people in this fucking film. I was like, ooh, okay. Thank you. Yeah.
But, so he had, you know, background in some action films. So he had done, you know, a lot of the, like, you know, the combat and everything, but he said this one was really fucking hard to do because the fighting was really unusual because of the erratic movements that the zombies had. And the zombies just move so masterfully and uniquely.
Oh my God. I was wondering, like, how did they hire like circus performers? Cause these people, like, they would like move in such interesting ways. It was so fucking good.
I tried to look that up, but not too hard apparently. But it was, I believe that a lot of those extras had to have a dance or contortionist or gymnast background, if, you know, at least movement. Cause it's just, it's great.
It's so good.
it's so creepy. It gives me a lot of those vibes. You know how, like, when they will, like, they did this in The Ring, they do this, they did this in Salem's Lot, where they film things in reverse, and that's what it looks like, but they didn't do that.
Yeah,
like this, because it's so fast paced that it's not the filming things in reverse to give it that eerie effect. I think they do that. They do it in Salem's Lot. They do it in Carrie, a bunch of different films. But the and as we've talked about the CGI, it had great makeup. The blood vessels on all the zombies were actually airbrushed on, though. So that's that was awesome. One less thing that was less CGI. And so kind of talking about those movements, the team, really tried to, refer back to, or, were inspired by zombies in this game, 7 Days to Die, as well as the movements and the dolls from this manga, Ghost in the Shell. And also throwback to our Silent Hill episode, the nurses in Silent Hill were also served as an inspiration to this.
Those nurses served. And then they served as inspiration. Hell yeah. Big clap for those nurses. Tens across the board.
Yeah. So we, and then with that, again, I talked a lot about, and we'll save this, for the anal cyst, but there's just so much of this film that is very reflective of the Korean culture. And one of the big aspects is putting community first. And that, so obviously, there's very large themes of helping others before you help yourself, or, just being there for your fellow person. And I, really appreciate that. And I think that that is really what adds to the, the true heart of this film.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. It's really obvious the, like, kind of theme, the thesis theme of this film.
Mm-hmm.
And typically for me, zombie films don't always, like, they always want something to say, and a lot of times it falls flat, but I enjoyed this one, right? Like, it really is very interwoven within the story in such a such an easy way to move the story along. I like it. I think it's great.
Awesome. Yeah. Before we move on to the next segment, just a quick little announcement. We've been, we're been around, three seasons, but, we're always an evolving podcast. So one thing that we want to be mindful of is, making sure that, we're not repeating a lot of the same things throughout our episode. So what we're going to do is we're just going to jump directly into the plot breakdown. This is the section where we normally discuss the characters, kind of the main characters one by one, but to save, kind of you having to listen to the same thing kind of twice in an episode, we'll just throw in our commentary on the characters as they pop up.
Exactly. And if you guys are so compelled and you're like, you know what, we loved it and we think this didn't work, but that does, please email it to us, right? Yes. Like, and your feedback is incredibly important. That's why we ask for 5-star reviews, because we need those feedbacks. No, but like feedback is really important. We want to make this a great listening experience for everyone.
Totally. And yeah, so if you have suggestions, slide into the DMs on our Instagram, Scared Gay Podcast, or you can email us, scaredgaypodcast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Well, welcome to the stage, Train to Busan.
Busan. Jess asked me, how many times are you and Pablo going to use the word bussy? And I was like, probably not too many, but
yeah,
but maybe.
But you know what? Let's get it out. Bussy, bussy, bussy. Bussy, 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 bussy. Okay, Train to Bussy. So we open up the movie with a truck driver, and he's driving. He's trying to get past these two men in hazmat suits, but they stop him and they're like, hey, we have a chemical spill. You can see that there's some stuff in the background, but like, we got this chemical spill. And he's just like, hey, you're not letting me through. I need to go through. So they finally let him through, and he's on the phone. First fucking wrong thing that he did, texting while driving. No. And then he hits fucking Bambi. Motherfucking Bambi is dead. He looks, he's like, oh my God, it's poor dear. And then he gets up and he keeps on driving. Then she don't gets back up.
She gets back up. And it's so creepy. It's so creepy.
I know, those eyes.
those eyes, and then they turn and look at at the camera and everything, and then we get the title card, Train to Busan.
Yep.
And you know, this truck driver having a conversation about, you know, a spill or leak at a power plant, that's, you know, that's not going to come into play ever.
No, never. It
has nothing
never.
Nothing to do with what we're about to see.
Speaking of spill at a power plant that has nothing to do with the film, we get introduced to our main character, Seok-woo.
That was a beautiful, beautiful segue.
I know, right? Seok-woo. And we find out that he's like working hella late. He's like really a career-oriented person, right? He's a busy fund manager. And one of the things in the beginning, we're introduced to the fact that, like, you know, he's on the phone with his wife or his ex-wife, and she's like, well, you know, she wants to come see me in Busan and blah, blah, blah. And he's just like, okay, you know, like, she's like, don't forget, it's her birthday tomorrow. And obviously setting up that he is so involved with his job that he kind of forgets about those around him. And we meet his mom, who's this elderly woman that, you know, she kind of shuffles when she goes and meets him. She wants to make sure that he ate, but she tells him, like, yo, son, you missed your daughter's recital. And she's like in her room. You really need to like step it up. And it's her birthday tomorrow, you know? And, you know, the daughter's in her room. She talks about wanting to be independent and go to Busan by herself. He gives her, he's like, you think I forgot your birthday? I'm a good dad. I'm a good dad. And he gives her a wee. And she's like, bitch, you gave me one already.
Yeah. And Suwon is so fucking good in this, the actor.
Oh, she's amazing.
Cause it just totally reads that, you know, she's kind of, you know, this neglected daughter. And, you know, I think that it's so important to also touch on what exactly he does for work and what's kind of keeping him so far away. He's definitely, you know, very career focused, but what he does, he's a fund manager. Basically, it's like mergers and acquisitions. So, like, they purchase companies and dissolve them, or, you know, kind of throw them to the side. It's important to the plot that this company is, you know, it's not that it's shady. It's just unethical capitalism, kind of, you know, these types of companies actually exist. And he's just driven by success, but it's really, really fucking up his relationship with his daughter. And the fact that he buys her another Wii and she's just like, I want to go see mom. And he's, you know, trying to get her to stay another week. And she's like, not having it.
Okay. Here's the thing. I got the sense that the mom didn't really care about seeing the daughter either. Not that she was like, oh, I hate that little bit. She was just like, she's also kind of like, I'm busy.
Absent. And I get the sense that she left.
Yeah. With what the grandma says later.
Yeah. So like she left, and which also, yeah, is kind of shitty if, you know, she's not like wanting to. It's just sad. And, yeah, you know, poor Suwon, she's having the worst birthday ever. And she will continue to have the worst birthday ever.
Oh my God, that sucks. What a terrible birthday. Oh, poor little girl. Feel for her. She's so cute. And she's such a good actress. She does such a great job in this role.
So good.
So, you know, he goes and checks the video that his mom recorded of Suwon at the recital, and she's singing this song, and she
Aloha Oi.
Aloha Oi, yeah. And she kind of stops halfway, and then the kids start making fun of her, and she just kind of climbs up, and you hear the teacher say, oh, it's okay, it's okay. So obviously she didn't finish. And obviously she's like looking around for something, and she's like sad. And he kind of looks at it, and he's like, and just kind of goes like, and he like closes it, right? So he brings it up to her the next day as they're driving to the train station. But instead of like, I was talking about this with Chris. I was like, it's kind of sad because instead of like asking what's wrong, he was like, why didn't you finish? Well, you're supposed to finish anything you start. Like he kind of like punishes her a little bit. Right? And so I thought that was sad.
It is sad. And especially because later we find out why she stopped singing. And like, and it's just, this is just doing a great setup of like who these characters are, the points that they're trying to make. And, you know, Su-on is many times in this film the voice of reason, mm-hmm. in so many ways, and like a much more moral character than a lot of the people we see in the film. But it's, you know, that tense relationship. But the actors do such a good job because they're is still love there. Even before the events that happen later in the film, I never doubt that he loves her. And she obviously is much more invested in this father-daughter relationship than he might be, or at least lead on to.
Yeah.
But it's so disconnected. It's a parent who may love you, but doesn't know how to place that love is kind of the read that I got.
Yeah, no, 100%. And like later on, Sang Hwa kind of says something where I'm like, okay, this is starting to tie in together. But still, like, you know, this is a girl who's longing for her parents, is longing for her dad, is longing for her mom, right? Yeah. And in that drive, you kind of get the sense that he can't make that connection because he punishes her. But then they're quickly interrupted by those, like, a bunch of, like, emergency trucks, like, fire trucks and like, police and all that stuff kind of driving by. And he almost, like, hits it.
Again, not related to the plot at all.
Not at all. Just a typical 6 a.m. in Seoul, right? And Su-an keeps, like, opening and closing the passenger window. And then she kind of looks outside and puts her hands out. And she, like, catches some ash. And then you see that there's a burning building, and and you know, the dad's like, looks like stuff's going on. Okay. Wow. Mr. Obvious. Thank you. So the train is interesting because now we're being introduced to a lot more characters, right? There's this baseball team filled with like teenage baseball players. And they're, I actually thought, super hot coach. But there's them. We meet these two elderly sisters, and one is like trying to give her an egg, and she's like, it's only an hour away.
I love them.
Yeah, they're adorable.
They're adorable, and like they bicker, but just that, you know, that bond is there. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, and it's so important to see that. The introduction of all of these characters is quick, but it's
very effective. Telling.
It's concise.
100%. I love the way they kind of introduce Jin-hee, because she kind of like struts in, and she's like in her little skirt, and she's cute, and she goes with the baseball players, and they're like, obviously all the guys are into her. And she's like, sits down, and she like tells Young-guk, like, when I say I like you, you're supposed to say thank you. Like she's like throwing herself, you know, she's essentially what would be in American television, like the much more sexually forward girl, right? The one that's a lot more forward.
And then when I watched this, and it happened twice, I forgot that I had thought this the first time I watched it too. I was like, is he gay? Because he's just not into it at first, and he's just kind of like, okay, whatever. But like, I think it more speaks to him just being a teenage boy, and like,
yeah,
the different types of teenage. We have the really horny ones that are on his baseball team, and then we have, you know, a little bit more of the shy guy. Kind of.
Yeah, 100%. He's emotional. He's a lot more emotional, which also comes to play later on. But, you know, we do meet some other ones, but we meet them a little bit later. So we'll get into them, right? But the train is busy as fuck. We have two stewardesses, a steward and a steward, right? Like people who
work. Let's call them train attendants. Let's call them train
attendants. Thank you. I was like, what the fuck is that word? Two train attendants, one who looks, I was like, oh, they cast like a fashion model to play her, because she's
stunning.
She is gorgeous and statuesque and everything. I was like, whoa, okay, good job, Busan. And so as the train starts leaving, and as it's about to leave, someone like rushes into the train.
Yes.
And
there are two stowaways that we kind of have.
Yes. Someone rushes into the train, and she is injured, and her hair's in her face, and she's injured, and she's like, she's kind of like struggling, but no one notices her.
What I love about that entrance, though, is it happens right behind the the conductor or whomever the ticket taker's back. It's super quick, but And it's not like it's a background thing, because it's definitely, it's the focus of the shot, but it just, it happens so fast. And it's just one of those moments where you're like, okay, like this
there
is,
it is,
something's coming up.
For real. But what, why the, so the like conductor, like the station manager or train conductor standing outside, he's like scanning to see if anyone else is there. But as he scans, he notices something in the distance, like right inside the train station at the stairs going down into where all the trains are docking. That's when she comes in. But what he's noticing is there's a crowd of people gathered around, and there's a weird commotion and what looks like two men fighting.
Yes.
So there's something happening, and this is the shit that I love about like zombie films. It's all of the buildup of things happening in the background before the chaos like is like full balls to the wall crazy, right? And it skips forward just ever so slightly. Seok-woo is asleep and Su-an is not, and she's like looking out the window when she sees like someone attack the conductor as they're leaving, and she's like, okay. And then she notices that there's an elderly man, not an elderly man, but like an older middle-aged man who we find out later is Yeon Suk, the CEO. He tells one of the attendants, like, there's something weird going on. There's someone in the lavatory, in the washroom. They've been in there for a while. They're fucking acting crazy. And you hear someone else scream like, they've been in there forever, right? And this is where I'm like, what the hell? Like, you know, Su-an is like, I'm gonna get up, you know, I'm gonna check out, I'm gonna take care of this. And she like walks right in the middle of them trying to figure out who this person is.
But isn't she just trying to go to the bathroom?
Yeah, she is. But she like comes in and she like stands in the middle of them as they like open the thing. And, you know, it's the unhoused man. And he is just saying they're all dead. They're just kind of repeating to himself, they're all dead, they're all dead. And then, you know, Yeon-suk like taps Su-an on the shoulder. And he's like, if you don't go to school, like this is how you'll end up. And her response is fucking great.
Yes.
She's like, my mom says people who talk like that are bad people. And he goes, sounds like your mom didn't graduate high school. I was like, fucking asshole.
He's such a dick, but she clocks him. She's a fearless, like, child.
She's great.
But she's fearless in a way that, like, any other kind of film would have her portrayed as kind of, like, precocious, like, always talking back. She keeps those moments of, like, dry talking back in a very subdued manner.
I
appreciate that.
Oh, 100%, because American movies would go for a precocious child, and then they would make the precocious child like essentially a wise 70-year-old genius in the body of like an 8-year-old, which to me I think is infuriating. I think it's so dumb. But they make her precocious, but they don't make her not a child. She is still a child. And so so all this is happening, but while the train's focus is on the unhoused man, what is actually happening is the woman who had rushed in is in another washroom, tying stuff to her legs because she's like in a lot of, you know, she's been attacked.
She's trying to do like a tourniquet kind of deal.
And she's apologizing to herself. She's like, I'm so sorry, it's all my fault, or whatever. She's like talking to herself. So we don't know what she went through, but obviously it was bad. And then she attacks the like supermodel attendant.
And with her, like, they think at first she's just having a seizure, like, and then you hear her later when she's talking to the other train attendants, where she's like, this basically saying this seizure isn't stopping. Like,
yeah,
she's still seizing.
Like, yeah,
it's so creepy.
Yeah. So stewardess is attacked, and then what ends up happening? And so as stewardess is attacked, there's stuff going on. So we're seeing a lot of things happen because the train is long, right? There's like a ton of like at least 15 cars, right? So Su-an is in one, the woman's attacked in another. So Su-an is like going and looking for a bathroom. We meet Sang-hwa, and he at first comes off as a dick, right? He's like, there's a long line, there's two people that need to piss.
I mean, he's a complicated character, but I'm going to say it. he's a dick. Like he redeems himself later, but there definitely are, like, I don't think he and Song Kyung are going to be married forever.
I think
they love each other, but like there's definitely love there, but I don't know.
He's
lovable, but he's a dick.
But I and I'll go into my analysis. I think it's incredibly important the way he is. I actually think it's part of a much bigger thesis of this story of why he specifically has to act this way and be this way. Yeah. Because he's like kind of rushing her along and he's like, you know, there's another one, but like I'm in line and there's two people in there. And we find out that it's his pregnant wife, right? He's in there and he's just kind of trying to tend to her. And she's kind of like, you're annoying.
They are so bickering and it's so fucking,
it's so funny. Yeah. But you know, so the little girl is like able to like go to the bathroom. Right. But as all that is happening, the stewardess that is attacked by the stowaway enters the baseball cart, and with that woman on top of her like ripping her neck open, and she like falls down, and all the guys, all the entire baseball team is like, what the fuck is happening? And Jin-hee is like, what the fuck do we do? And they're all freaked out. And then, you know, the stowaway gets up and attacks one of the baseball players, and as everyone's watching the baseball player, Jin-hee is like watching the attendant that was attacked, and she's like moving and writhing and doing all these things, and all of a sudden she like lets out a scream and she's a zombie. She goes after others and then boom, breakout.
And this is the same thing we kind of talked about with Jazz and Kat about 30 Days of Night, of like everyone seems to get infected and it takes the virus longer with some people and shorter with others. And like that, that's like could take me out of it a little bit because it's always very convenient for the plot, how the timing happens. But the rest of this is so good that I'm not going to like ding anything for it.
Yeah. Well, I would say when I got the sense that, cause I was like, that's really interesting. But I noticed a bit of a pattern. People who were like killed, like once the virus bites them and kills them, they turned quickly. People who are like what would be considered just like a normal bite and not life threatening, they take longer to turn.
Okay.
Right. Because, and so Chris and I were trying to figure out what kind of virus is it? Is it a virus like rage virus in 28 days later? Or is it like a virus that kills you and then reanimates you?
I want to say it's more the rage one. I think that's what would be my guess, because I don't think that these, because of the ones that happen so quickly, I don't think that they necessarily have the time to like fully die. Because you have to think about how long it takes someone to bleed out. Even if you bite a chunk out of their neck, it's still going to take them a few minutes. And the ones that are instant.
If you get like the carotid artery, you die. However, that deer died and then it comes back to life. That's why I'm like, I think it's like a mix of a rage and like a reanimated corpse type of thing. But people can still die. Like these things still die. All the baseball players except four, which are Jin-hee, Young-guk, and then two other boys escape. Those four escape. All the rest are fucking attacked and turned. So now the infection is spreading, and now it's starting to get kind of real crazy. It's going through all the cars, all the compartments, and people are getting attacked and infected, and they're just going. But around this time, Seok-woo wakes up and notices that his daughter's missing, and he's like, I'm gonna go check out where she's at. And as he is going, we see what's happening on the TV. And I think this is also very telling in this movie, in like the world of this movie. It is like a government official who, and we see this in all zombie films, they're like, do not be blah, blah, blah. Or like this, we do not know what it is. They're kind of telling the public what they think is happening. And in this one, the guy says, do not look up the word zombie. Don't look that up. You are all safe. But we're seeing images of cities are now completely destroyed. And they're just calling it rioters. right? And so it's like, that's kind of the spread of misinformation. I just thought that that was interesting. And as he's looking for her, you know, people are running, and there's all this commotion. There's a ton of commotion, and he gets a call, and you know, they're telling him like there is a fucking problem. Like these people are rioting, and these people are going crazy, and there's so much violence. Like what the fuck? And he's like, what? And you know, he's getting all this information. He's seeing all these things, and then he sees his daughter, and she is just kind of standing frozen. Like, what the hell do I do? And there's a horde of zombies coming after her. And so he has to save her, rushes and grabs her. And as he's doing that, you know, there's a lot. What this movie does really well, there's a lot of running. And it's so fast paced. Everyone is running. Everyone is running from point A to point B. Point B doesn't work. Go to C, do this, go back, all that stuff. So this is a big part of the, like, big chunk of the film, right? Is all the running that's happening.
There's a lot of running and barricading, and everything happens again really, really fast. We'll do our best to like try to really nail all of the points, but there's just a lot of back and forth here.
There's a lot of that. So as he's running to save her, he's literally just thinking, I'm going to save her. So they pass by like Sang-hwa and his pregnant wife, right? And they're able to go, and they're like running. They're running behind them. And at some point he like closes the door on them and doesn't want to let them through. And they're like, let us through. And they are finally kind of able to force their way through and then close it. And they're, you know, all the zombies come up to the door, and the zombies can see through the plastic, like the plastic windows. And they're like, doing all their shit, right?
Yeah. And the zombies are definitely scary, and like, but they're kind of stupid. I appreciated that. Right. Like, I think sometimes the smart zombies, I think, are what I don't like as much. I kind of like these ones that are really just like vicious killing machines, like versus like the vampires in 30 Days of Night, where it's more kind of, you know, this one, it's just a pack of wild animals.
Oh yeah, because they've lost their humanity, right? They're no longer humans. They are just these things that are out to kill, and I don't know if they're trying to eat humans or what. They're just out to kill. And Sang-hwa at this point gets really fucking pissed off, and he's like, hey, you're a fucking asshole. You were just going to leave us out. Like, why the fuck are you an asshole? And he's like, well, fuck you. Like, essentially, you know? And I was like, yeah, give it to him. He's a selfish prick. Right. And so, you know, all that is happening. Seok-woo realizes that like the zombies don't know how to open doors. Like, they're actually kind of dumb. The only reason that they have
been... That's why I said they were stupid.
Yeah, hella stupid. They're fucking stupid ass zombies and shit. Like, hella, pero muy stupid and shit. And he's like, let go of the door. Watch, they're not going to do anything. And they don't. They're just like, eh. And everyone's like, wow, so impressed. Well, they find out that they have a next stop, which is Daegu. Oh, sorry. Before they find out that they're going to Daegu, they do something really smart, and it's actually the pregnant wife that does something really smart. She throws water on the thing and on like the door.
I fucking love that. Paper.
It was so good.
So glad that you called that out, because like Seong-kyung is so fucking smart, and like I really like her, like her character throughout the film. And it's not like, I'm so glad that they gave her that moment of throwing the water and putting up being smart and using that barricade versus the entire time she's just a damsel in distress. And yes. I really like that they gave her a moment of agency, and the way that she's contributing to this community and helping save people as well.
Exactly. Right.
Really like that moment.
Oh, it was great. It was actually really smart too. And I was like, fuck yeah, she's great. So they're going to Daegu because the conductor like tells them like, we're not going to go to Busan. We're going to go to Daegu because apparently it's safe there, and we're just going to go. But yeah. Seok-woo's not stupid. And he's like, I have a contact there. So he calls his contact. Seems like it's someone in like some government or whatever. And he's like, hey, it's me. And the guy's like, it's not a good time, bitch. Like, bye. And is about to hang up. And he's like, no. I'm on a train. We're supposed to go to Busan, but we're being stopped where you are. Is it safe? And he's like, yeah.
Sure.
Totes. Yeah.
And this is very, you know, Suk-woo, because he's basically trying to be like, okay, like, get me on a lifeboat. and find like a way to work around. And this is so important because this is, again, reinforcing that whole mindset of, you know, putting yourself first, not looking out for others, and just kind of, you know, doing whatever you have to do to save just yourself.
Yeah, 100%, right? Because he finds out that they would be put in quarantine. Everyone's going to be put in quarantine. They're going to be ushered down one way. They're going to be put in quarantine. But the friend is like, go this other, like, you know, to the left, you know, like, you better fucking do that. And he's like, well, I have my daughter. Can you save her? And the guy's like, sure. So he hangs up. And then we find out that the unhoused man was in the same car as him and heard the entire thing. Didn't say anything about it, but just heard it.
Yeah.
Right? So we arrive at the station.
Oh, this part's so tense.
Oh,
so good.
Everyone gets out of the train and you're already like, okay, what the fuck? So people are getting out of the train, but the only people who are able to get out of the trains are the ones who are not zombies. So right now, those bitches are getting out of the train. And
there was one part of that where I'm like, because you see all the doors open automatically. And I'm like, what about the doors to the trains that had that had the zombies on it? But then in my mind, what I'm telling myself is they didn't open automatically. People are actually opening them. That's the only thing that I'm in my head canon, so that I can not get too cerebral.
Yeah, for sure. No. I know exactly what you mean.
Did you think that too? Did that cross your mind?
I was always like, I'm surprised that the doors don't open automatically when someone goes to it, but like, yeah. Yeah.
Well, not the doors between the cars, but the doors like to get to exit the trains.
Yeah.
You would think that those are automatic.
Yeah. You would, but they're not. Not in Busan, right? So when they get there, they're all like moving. And so they decide they're going to go out the main entrance because that's where safety is. So everyone is going down the main entrance and they're above and they have to go down below. Seokwoo is like, we're going to go this way. And his daughter's like, what? Why? No, everyone's going that way. And he's like, no, we're going to go this way. And that's when the unhoused man is like, I'm going to go with you. I heard, and he didn't say it so like cocky. He was like, I'm gonna go with you. I heard what you said. I'm gonna go with you. I'm safer with you. And you know, Su-an is like, well then what the fuck? We gotta tell everyone. And the dad's like, no. In this world, you have to take care of yourself. You can't be so nice all the time.
And this is, you know, does not sit well with Su-an.
No, she's like, you really are selfish. That's why mom left you. Damn.
Yes. And she's like through reading a bitch for filth.
Reading a bitch for filth. She is like starting to cry. She's like really upset with her dad. And then so two things are happening simultaneously. You have a big group of people going down an escalator next to a group of people going down some stairs. And then the unhoused man notices a military man slowly walking towards them from the other hall. So as we have the baseball players, we have the pregnant couple, we have the elderly ladies, we have the older CEO dude. They're all going down the escalators and walking down the main hallway when there's a wall of military men. And
they're all zombies.
All zombies. And they turn around and go right for the survivors.
And they are very close to the escalators. So, like, there is not much time. The people who are on the down escalator are obviously that part, I was just like, oh, fuck.
That is the worst place to be.
Because they're having to run up a down escalator and you see they're getting caught. Sung Hwa does the right thing in, like, he picks up his wife and he puts her over the railing so that she can run up the stairs.
Yeah.
Rather than trying, and he jumps over too, rather than trying to, you know, run the,
yeah,
run up the down escalator. Apparently my mom tells a story all the time where my sister, when she was really little, got really pissed at her and turned around on an escalator, and it was just the two of them in a mall. My sister ran up the down escalator to get away from her. I think she was like three.
Oh my God. That's so funny. Yeah, so that's crazy. But then the military man that's approaching the unhoused man, Seokwoo and Su-an, is bloody, but he's not a zombie. He's asking for help. And what the fuck happens? A horde of zombies is right on his tail and attacks him. So Seokwoo, one of the things that he did, and I think it kind of also showcases that he is not as connected to his daughter, doesn't think about his daughter as much, is he tells his daughter to stay put while he goes to follows the houseless man, the unhoused.
He does this a lot. A lot of people tell people in this movie, like, oh, just wait here. And then you just see her standing there holding her cute little backpack. Like, and she's just, I thought the exact same thing too. I'm like, dude, why are you leaving her there?
Yeah. Right.
She's how old? 8.
And like, if it's help, take her with you. Like, what the fuck? And so as he's attacked and they're running, Seokwoo turns around and all the remaining survivors are running for their life behind them with a horde of zombies chasing them. So now his daughter is actually closer to another horde of zombies than he is. So he runs for her, but luckily Sang-hwa and his wife save her first, right? They just out of nowhere. And we see that a lot, that they do save people. A lot of people get saved. Like the two old elderly sisters, when they fall, someone picks one up and saves her, right? Like people are doing their best.
And that speaks a lot to, because there's also a moment, I think, that'll happen a little bit later has it already happened where they are given, where Su-an offers her seat to the elderly women, or does that happen later? Because it's a moment.
It already happened. It already happened. Yeah.
So like that speaks a lot also to the Korean culture as well.
Yes.
Of taking, like, the older you are, the more respect you deserve. So it's interesting because there are times when that rule is kind of violated by the more asshole-y people, like the COO and sometimes Seokwoo. But that I think is also another important element to see. So I'm glad you brought up how they pick up, the elderly ladies.
Yeah.
They're also, again, just so fucking funny, because that scene, kind of like, just quickly jumping back to that scene where they're sitting down. Su-an,
she's so happy.
Su-an offers her this like single seat to the older one, because the older one made the younger sister sit down, and she's like, bitch, I'm younger than you. Like, why are you doing this? Yeah. It's so cute. They're so cute.
They are cute. At this point, they're running, and they're running back for the trains, trying to get on the fucking train, right? And this horde of zombies coming after them. Everyone is running. The two baseball players get attacked. And so we have Young-guk, right?
Yes.
And Jin-hee are the only ones left out of that whole baseball thing. And they're able to make it on the train. So a lot of them get separated, right? Like the unhoused man, the pregnant wife, they are able to get on the train earlier because, you know, when
The men are basically separated from their female counterparts. So like Seokwoo is separated from his daughter. Husband and wife are separated. And then baseball player and Jin-hee are separate. So it's basically separating the men and the women at this point.
Yeah, right. Because a group of, like, the baseball players, another group of men, including the ones we just named, stayed behind to keep the doors closed, to try to lock them so the zombies don't get in, while everyone else ran to the train. But there is another horde that ended up coming onto the trains by breaking the windows from above the trains and started falling on the trains and attacking. So that's when the two sisters get separated. That's when, I think.
No, and then no, no. The, Yeah, the two sisters are separated.
Jin-hee and the baseball player are separated because they kind of come. He kind of like is able to find her and come together. Because once all the zombies are out, they're out, like including the doors, right? Like all the men are running at this point. It's like pandemonium. It's fucking crazy. There's all this shit happening.
But we basically get this group, the main like group of what, you know, we'll eventually, let's just call them like the survivors that kind of happen later, of Suk-woo, Sung-hwa, hold on one second.
Young-gok.
Young-gok, and then the older sister, In-jil. So it's kind of, I think it's just those four or five at that point.
Well, so it's...
No.
Three men are put together. So one of the things that's happening is they were... A zombie gets between two sisters and the unhoused man and Su-an and the pregnant wife and the older of the two sisters are able to get pulled inside the train while the other sister goes with the like asshole survivors, right? With the CEO. Okay, so there's that separation, and Jin-hee goes with the CEO because she saves the older lady. The youngest of the older sisters of the older ladies. So there's all this. It's crazy, right? And in the entire time we have like, you suck fucking that CEO fucking being like, just leave. And Jin, he's like, you can't leave my friends. They're coming. Right. Yeah. But you know, a lot of them die. So there's a lot happening, right? Like they, you know, everyone gets banded together. Well, we find out that, the four survivors, the unhoused man and the three lovely ladies, have barricaded themselves inside a bath, like inside the bathroom,
like a lavatory kind of,
a lavatory with a bunch of zombies trying to get in. Mm-hmm. And, we find the three male survivors find out because Sang-hwa calls his wife. And Su-an answers it. And he's like, why are you answering? And she's like, because we're in the bathroom. And then he's like, what the hell is going on? And they're like, just fucking get here. So they're like, oh, my God. And you see it in his face where he's like, I don't know if I can save them. Like, we're in car 9. They're in car 13. That's 4. Like, I don't think we can save them.
Yeah.
We're kind of screwed.
So scary.
But that's when Seok-woo is like, we're going. I don't care. We have to find a way to save them. And so they devise this plan of the leader is Sang-hwa, the middleman is Seok-woo, and the last guy is Young-gok, right? The baseball player. So they're going to go through and they're going to fight the zombies to go all the way to save the ladies. And that's
it's pandemonium. And like, yeah. And as you and I were trying to like explain, like how the groups get split up, it is confusing to watch on screen, but it does, you know, eventually like make sense, but it's all kind of, again, this is one of the parts where it's super fucking fast paced. You really have to be paying attention, especially if you're watching with subtitles. So, which I do just want to say, highly recommend. I tried to watch this on Peacock it auto set to dubbing. I highly recommend to not watch the dub version, to watch it where you're just watching with subtitles and you're actually hearing, you know, the actors in their native language. It makes
100
such a difference.
Oh, it does. That's how we watched it. I love
Although dubbing sometimes is funny. I watch a lot of like foreign documentaries, like true crime documentaries, and for those ones I'll use the dubbing. But for anything that's like acted, you like especially Korean horror films, you don't watch the dubbing because dubbing is very rarely done well.
Oh, very rarely. I remember when we were in Guatemala, we were watching a bunch of like Law and Order and stuff with my aunt and uncle, which was dubbed into Spanish. And it was so funny. I was like, interesting. Okay. So this is how the fight goes. The first one, they fight their way through. They tie stuff around themselves. So if they get bit,
they suit up. They suit up. Sang-hwa, oh, yeah. Sang-hwa puts these like arm guards on. Somehow fucking Seok-hwa gets a shield and a lead pipe. It is like, but it's not comical, but explaining it is it's a little comical. Yeah.
No, 100%. It's so good. So boom, bitches are going through. The first one, they fight. They like fight and beat the shit out of zombies, right? They're like taking them down one by one. Then they get into the next one. And in the next one, Young-guk actually shows how kind of sensitive he is, because he can't move. He can't engage. He can't fight because it's all his baseball friends that are turned. And
you have to kind of think like, you know, how hard that would be. I mean,
yeah,
you've mentioned before you would sacrifice your dad, so I know you would have zero problem smashing me in the face with a lead pipe. But
it doesn't even need to be a zombie outbreak.
Fuck you. I don't know if I could do it to you. I guess if I had to, but this is where this movie is so successful for me, in that the actors all do such a good job that it's so emotional, because again, there's the prevailing theme of putting other people before yourself, or trying to save yourself before others. But at the same time, there's so much humanity that you're seeing the characters that have not gone through this, this change, and that juxtaposition between what you're seeing with the horde, with the zombies, with people experience like real true humanity. I think that is what makes it so visceral and relatable. Mm-hmm. Even if we're dealing in different cultures, we're still human. Right. So I think that I just like moments like that where you see him so frozen and conflicted with like, these are still my friends.
Yeah. This is where we see kind of his humanity. He's really like, and this is what I was saying, like, he kind of freezes, and I understand that it's for dramatic effect as well, but I was like, this actually really makes me understand him even more. And it makes me understand a choice he makes towards the end of the film. And I'm like, he's a nice guy. Like, he's actually a fucking nice guy. He's scrappy as fuck, because he'll fight a bitch, and he is scrappy as fuck. He's fearless, but he's also very sensitive. And when he sees this, like, you can see that there's pain in him. Like, fuck, these are my friends. Like, I know yesterday we were hanging out, like 3 hours ago we were joking around, right? Like, I can't imagine what that's like. Everyone gets their little dose of humanity where we're like, this is where we're like, really love this person. And, mm-hmm. Sang-hwa is not stupid. And he kind of tells, we know that he had a conversation with Su-an a long time ago about her dad, but this time he kind of throws it in his face. He's like, hey, you're going to have to be in the middle, because, you know, I know you're used to leaving people behind. You're a fund manager. That's what you do. You leave the weak behind. So he's not going to allow him to do that. And so and they work well together. They actually do work really well together. We're starting to see Seok-woo kind of be joined at people and be invested in other people, right? It really happened when Sang-hwa saved his daughter. Then he joined the group, and we're really seeing it, but we really see the turn in a bit. So,
and it totally is a turn, and none of the characters like necessarily change like on a dime. There's definitely still a gradual build.
100%. Yeah.
Build for all of them. And also the zombies even have a bit of a build too, because this is also where we learn that when they're in tunnels, the lights go out and the zombies basically freeze. And
if they can't see you, they don't know you're there. And mm-hmm. so this is what happens with the baseball zombies, right? Mm-hmm. They go through a tunnel and then they're just like looking around. They have no idea. Baseballs fall. They don't really respond to that. They're like, what the fuck? They're not violent. They're just like confused. So they decide, I'm going to use your phone, you know, to use the phone as a decoy. So in the next tunnel, they throw the phone and he calls it, which I was also like, you get cell service in a fucking train tunnel? Like, oh, yeah. Oh,
I guess, yes. I guess the service is much better in Korea. That is also another thing. If this pandemic, no one's cell phones would really be able to work. The cell phone signals would be totally jammed from everyone trying to use their phones. I'm sure there would be towers that had been knocked out by these zombies and everything too. So
yeah, 100%.
Just something I noticed.
No, I so did I. But they use it. And so in the, you know, in the tunnel, they call the phone and the zombies go straight for the phone. And that's how they're able to escape. And then in the second one, so they get to their next horde of zombies and they're like, how are we going to do this? Okay. So they, Seok-woo, who's very smart, he's a very clever man, is like, he's planning ahead. He's like, we know that like we have to go. We have to save these people, but what the fuck are we going to do afterwards? We don't know if there's other zombies there. You know, there was a point where Jin-hee had told Young Gok that they're in cart 15, so they know that they can make it to that one because they're safe there. So they can go to 13 and they go straight to 15, right? So they're like, okay, how are we going to do this? How are we going to do this? And so they're trying to find where all the tunnels are and everything. So in this first one, they finally make it, right? They fighting zombies are doing all that stuff. Well, they finally make it with everyone. They are able to like fight off some of the zombies in the dark. Everyone knows that they're there. And Sang-hwa kind of like scares his girlfriend a little bit, his wife a little bit, you know, and she gets so mad at him because she opens a door and she punches him in the chest. And he's like, oh, right. But then the lights come back on and the zombies see them and they're like, ah, let's go after them. So the three survivors lock themselves in the other lavatory across from where the four survivors are. And I think this is cute. This to me is where Sang-hwa is his. We've liked him because he's always saving other people and always trying to. And he's really dedicated to his wife and he's very gentle with her, even though he's a big lug. But this joke is something, right? And you can see like everyone's just starting to get along, right? He like tells, you know, the young baseball player, get that out of my face. And he's kind of steps up to him a little bit. And he's like, how tall are you even? And the guy's like, he like pretends to be tall. And he's like, I'm 5'9". And I was like, that's adorable. And Seok-woo like makes a joke at him. And he's like, wow.
Why is your ringtone so tacky?
Well, so tacky. And he's like, well, you don't like my ringtone? And then he kind of looks at Young Gok. And he's like, how do you change it? I just thought that was so, and you're just like, you know what? A little moment of levity. We like these guys. We're here for exactly. These guys. They are bonded together. We're great. We like them. So they're able to save them by having to go through another horde of zombies, by doing it in the dark and climbing through the luggage, right? It's all the luggage. And so they're doing that in the dark. There's some, you know, the unhoused man kind of steps on a can by accident. So they all come after them once the lights are on. And now it's starting to get like kind of sad, right? Because they are right there, right across from Carf.
The safe cart.
Yeah. And Jin-hee had just told everyone, they found people. They are going to save them. They're going to do this. And they found survivors and they're going to come. They're going to meet us here. And this is when we see what a piece of shit. Piece of shit Yeon-suk is, right? He is like, he starts yelling at her, which I was like, why the fuck are you yelling, bitch? Like, you're just calling zombies to you. But anyway, he starts yelling at her and he's like, how do you know they're not infected? We can't have them here. No. And he devises a plan with the other attendant and some of the people that they're just going to barricade them out.
Yeah.
Rather than barricading the zombies out, they're barricading survivors out. So when they finally are right there, trying to open the door, they can't get the door open. And you see everyone just tied that stuff to it, made it so that they can't open it. Sang-hwa is like holding the door open on the other side of cart 14 while the zombies are trying to get in.
Yeah, he's like, he is just full body weight behind everything, keeping it. There's only like about, I don't know, 7 inches of the door actually open. And they're like, they're scratching through it. And like, they're trying really hard to, one, keep them out, fight them off, and not get bitten. And so you're just,
yeah,
you're waiting for something to happen.
And he's doing it by himself, right? So that's rough. And it's just really tense because you're like, those fucking assholes are survivor assholes, right? And we see that the attendant has like put his, is like really like in such an assaultish type of way, like holding on to Jin-hee, covering her mouth as she's like trying to break free. It's just, it's rough all around. They're finally able to do it. But, you know, one of the things that happens is Sung-hwa gets bitten and you're just like, fuck, you know, and he's going to do everything in his power. He's going to fight off that infection as much as he can to save his wife, to save everyone else. They break the door down. They enter the fucking car 15. The younger of the elder sisters sees that her sister is there, and her sister is like tired and can barely make it. And she's like, oh, and she has to watch as the horde of zombies consumes the older sister.
Yes. One thing, that I do just want to call out, with Sung-hwa and like what makes it so sad. So earlier in the film, Su-hwan asks what the baby's name is, and they're very playful about it. She's like, or that, cause she says she's nicknamed the baby Sleepy.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, is that the baby's name? She's like, well, this is the fetus's name because someone hasn't thought of a name yet. And the moment, and then it fast forward then to the scene we were just discussing, Sung-hwa is about to sacrifice himself. And his wife is just standing there watching, realizing what's about to happen, and tears are filling up. I am crying.
Oh, this is a scene that his death makes me cry. Chris and I were crying because we love him.
I am ugly crying, especially because he says, I didn't write down what the name was, but he turns, says, like, he says like, I like Young Soon or something like that. And he's like, that's her name. And then it's just, and then, you know, they save the pregnant lady. They pull her into the, you know, the other car. Because Young-guk, like, he wailed on that door with his baseball bat to be able to get in. But then just, it's just, we're losing so many characters that we've become invested in. And then to top it all off, then the elderly woman sister gets killed.
It's so sad. It gets really sad. And before Sang-hwan gets, like, before he dies, after he got spitten, he actually tells Seok-woo, like, take care of my wife, like, stay with her, right? Like, he is devoted to her safety, which is adorable. So they get into car 15, and I fucking loved it, because Seok-woo, this is where we see that he is fully now changed. He has taken off. It's also funny because he comes in a suit, and as he's like becoming more selfless, he's taking parts of the suit off. Now he doesn't even have the suit on, right? It's just a t-shirt and pants. It's just a shirt and pants. And he punches.
It's still the button up. He still has his button up on. Yeah. And I, the reason I bring that up is because something that I was just like, at the very end of the film, his sleeves are still buttoned and everything. Yeah. And I'm like, I have a hard time keeping sleeves around my wrist anyway. I'm a push-up. Uh-huh. Push up your sleeves kind of girl.
Yeah.
And it just, that's my commentary on costume.
Fucking punches Yeon-suk in the face. He falls down.
He young socks him in the face.
Fucking old socks him in the face. And he just like lets him have it. He's like, they died because of you. Why didn't you? And Yeon-suk, being such a fucking coward, starts screaming, he's infected. He's infected. And like everyone is just kind of looking at him, and you know, they essentially kick off. They put them in like the
vestibule.
Like, yeah, in the vestibule. They say these survivors that come in have to go in the vestibule. They have to quarantine, right? And then these people are just going to like stay there because they're going to be safe there, they think. And Jin-hee decides to join them. Yeah, Jin-hee decides to join them. But what we don't see is the youngest of the elderly sisters is actually really upset. She just watched her sister die. And now she sees her sister as a zombie, like hitting the fucking door. And she's like, she kind of tells her sister, You're too nice.
You're an idiot. Yeah.
You're an idiot. Why did you let this happen? And then she looks at all the other survivors who are like trying to create order and yelling at people to sit down. And she's like, you're terrible. And she just opens the fucking zombie door.
And
they're stuck in because they have barricaded the other door. They can't open the other door. They're fucking stuck. And we just see the shadows of everyone getting attacked. While the remaining like five are just like, oh my God. Right. So
and Young Suk and the other guy,
the other attendant,
they lock themselves though in one of the lavatories.
Yeah. Because for sure.
But that, again, emotional moment. Like I just think about, you know, if it had been my sister, like you just see her just totally like, have a
with break. Her eyes. Yeah, you do.
But the younger of the two sisters, you just see her like have that break, and it's like, and I love the pacing of it because she's slowly walking up to the door, and then they give another shot where it's kind of just happening in the background too, and it is, I really liked from a storytelling perspective and how we move the plot along, it makes sense. Also because honestly, we need to get the number of survivors down. So it makes sense for there to be another big massacre to get rid of, you know. Good. And then, what's scary about that means there's more and more and more zombies.
Yep, exactly. So now they are pulling into, they have to go to another train station because they have to get, you know, the train stops because it's blocked, and the conductor, there's still the conductor. And he's like, we have to get off this fucking train and find another train to take us to Busan because Busan is safe, you know? And, you know, Suk Woo was like, he calls, you know, he gets like a call from like the analyst. And we find out that the job that they were doing had to do with the power plant that had the leak. Like, they are somewhat responsible for this. And the analyst is, like, crying. And he's like, is this my fault? Is this my fault? And Siak Wu says, no, it's not your fault. That was a very compassionate thing to say. It's actually the company's fault, right? But it's not. Yeah. We don't know exactly what and why it caused it, but we know that it has something to do with them. So anyway, everyone gets off the train. These people are getting off the train. And they're looking for other trains to get in. And we're seeing every single train has zombies in them, just watching them from the windows. Every single train. And the conductor's running, trying to find a very specific type of train, right? And he's by himself. But so is, you know, we also find out that, you know, Yun Suk and the other attendant survived by hiding in the bathroom. But when they open up, Yun Suk throws the attendant at the zombies and is able to escape that way.
Not only does he throw him to the wolves, he peeks out first and sees that the zombies are still out there, and then closes the door and tells the train attendant it's safe and for him to go first, and then just fucking pushes him. And he's like, bye, loser, basically, and runs off. This guy fuck is the fucking worst. I hate him.
Yeah, no, he's the worst. And then he's able to run out, right? So they're looking for some trains. They're trying to get in between trains. They're trying to find ways to cross train tracks and all that stuff. When a fucking burning pile of shit train is coming straight at them, hits a train, it derails the train, which collapses on top of them. So it hits another train, but it's collapsed on top of them. So they're on the ground looking up at a window on top of them of a bunch of zombies like trying to get them from a train that just got derailed, right?
That shot for some reason kind of they're looking up at them and they're like pounding on it, for some reason reminded me of the scene in Jurassic Park when the kids are stuck in the car and the T-Rex is eating on the plexiglass of like the moon car. Roof, the sunroof.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what it reminded me of, and I thought it was clever. So right now we have Jin Hee, Young Guk are by themselves and they've gotten to another train. We have the pregnant wife, we have Siak Woo, we have the unhoused man, and we have Suwon together with the train on top of them. We have Young Suk running around trying to like find stuff and escape from some zombies that are chasing him. And we have a conductor who's looking for a train, right? And so at one point, Jin-hee and Young-guk are kind of like trying to save themselves and close off this thing, and they're fine. What and like trying to get into a train and close it when we see Young-suk in the back come out of a train with a zombie attacking him. He grabs Jin-hee and throws her at the zombie. So he obviously attacks her and she turns. And we see, you know, Young-guk like have a breakdown and he's just holding her and he's crying as she's like writhing and she turns and we see that she like bites him in the neck and kills him.
Yeah.
Fucking Young-suk. What a piece of shit.
Fucking and spoiler alert, he's not done being the world's biggest douchebag.
He's not done yet. Not done yet. But now one of the things that's happening is under the trains, there's a way to get out. You know, Seok-woo finds a way to get out. But all of these zombies break through. And who decides to, like, fight off the zombies to give those three a chance to escape? The unhoused man, right? Like, he really kind of put himself out there. They tagged him along. They saved him. They did stuff for him. It is now his turn to help them survive. So he does that and the three survivors are able to run. So one of the things that we see is Young-suk is running with a bunch of zombies now chasing him, and we see a conductor had found a train and he's on the train and he's just like, oh god, and he starts to tell him, hurry up, hurry up, and he goes to try to save him. And what does Young-suk do? He uses his body as a shield for when the zombies attack him. So they ended up attacking the conductor and killing the conductor, giving him more time to run after this train and get on the train.
Ugh.
So then we also now see the three survivors running after a train. They get on the train, barely a bunch of zombies like latch on. And there's like this whole, there's like a bunch of like CGI of like a horde of zombies like rolling over each other and like latching onto the train. And, Seok-woo like hits their like kicks their fucking hands and they let go and they're like, cool, ugh, we're safe, we're on this like one caboose, which is just the main part of the train, so there's only the front part, we're fine, we're good. And what happens? Who's on the fucking train?
Suk continues Young to suck, fucking suck.
Who's now turning, and we see that he uses his last bit of humanity to open the door, because zombies don't know how to open the door, but he is still a human. So he's like confused and we can see that he's like, how do I do this? And he opens the door and he comes out and he tells Seok-woo, I'm scared. I just want to go to my mom. I live in Chung-young neighborhood district. And then he attacks Seok-woo and they're fighting.
And that he's an example of where I don't know, kind of like back to her point of like, I don't know if they're necessarily dying yet, because I think maybe this is more just for dramatic effect. But he literally 1 second is like, oh, I'm like this. And then he just looks up and then he's the monster and then kind of runs after him. They have this fucking insane like fight, though. And, you know, we have the pregnant wife and Su-wan just standing there watching this insane fucking fight there. And like, he is unfortunately bitten by
on the hand. Actually, he kind of sacrificed himself, because what happens is Young-suk has him over the train and his head's almost on the floor. Like of the gravel that's going by, and they're fighting when the pregnant wife grabs her purse and she starts to hit him. Mm-hmm. Right. And then he's able, like, Seok-woo is able to get back, and they're like this big brawl and they're fucking fighting when, you know, Su-en starts crying, and he, you know, the infected Young-suk turns his attention towards her and he jumps right after her. And what does Seok-woo do? He jumps on top of him and he puts his, because he's about to dive for the little girl, when he puts his hand over his mouth. Yeah. So he's like, I don't
moment of sacrifice.
That moment of sacrifice. Not my daughter. And like fucking, you know, bites. I don't think RuPaul would do that to any of her children.
Nope.
Thank you very much. But he's a good dad now. A good dad now. And he's bitten and he's able, you know, he's able to.
He does something insane, like, because he takes a chain and he ties it around his waist and he grabs Yeonsak and throws them both off the train. But he doesn't hit the ground. Flings back up.
Yeah, and I can imagine that hurts, but he's able to get back up. Then he grabs both of them, puts them in the front of the train, tells the pregnant wife, you stop this the moment you find safety and you stay with her. Never let her go. And then he goes to his daughter and he's like, you know, he's like very tender and he loves her and she is crying and she's telling him, don't go, don't go.
And she's not the only one who is crying like a baby. This was the moment where I paused the movie and I took that picture and I sent Pablo a picture of me crying. And you might have seen it by the time this comes out. You might have seen the picture on our Instagram story.
Yes. It is that girl does such a good job. That actress does such a good job crying. And he's just like, you know, I love you type of thing. And then he leaves and he goes to the back of that car, of that train car. And he's already turning. We see the veins, we see the eyes, but in his end, but he's smiling because he's just thinking of the day she was born and her little toes and how happy and probably scared he was. And then we just see a shadow and he just throws himself off.
I'm crying right now. It's so sad. And like that moment of sacrifice and like, and it just sucks because it's like, they were almost there and like, fuck these or like, forget the zombies. Yeonsak is like the real villain. And but it is this moment of growth where we see that like that's the path that Suk-woo was on. Was to become Yeonsak. And it's just, it's such a beautiful moment. And like, and when we see the flashback, it's like all in white and it's just very, like, soft, gorgeous. And then he fucking throws himself off the fucking.
Yeah. Save them, right? He doesn't want to attack them. And so then we end up in Busan. Oh, I do have to say this. When they were in the vestibule, Su-an let her dad know because he was like, I'm going to get you to your mom. And she asks him, are you scared? And he says, I am scared also. Yes, I am scared. And he's like, what about you? And she's like, I was scared. That's why I couldn't sing because I had this song for you and that you weren't there and that made me scared. Okay. So I know. So they arrive at Busan and there's shit. There's like dead bodies and like a pile up of trains. So, you know, they're like, okay, we can't go forward. So they stop it. They get out. They walk. We see like a zombie hand kind of twitch and they go.
There's bodies everywhere.
Yep. Yep. And it looks like military and civilian. And so they're like, we have to get to the other side of this tunnel. So they start walking through this tunnel and we're introduced to like two army men, right? Who are stationed at the other side of the tunnel with a gun pointed forward. Right.
And they're basically snipers.
Yeah. And they see that, you know, the pregnant wife and Su-an are walking towards them and they radio like, hey, we have two people. Looks like a woman and a small child. They're walking towards us and someone over the like walkie-talkie says, check for life, like check to make sure that they're not sick. And they tell them, we can't. What should we do? And the person says, kill them. So they're about to when they hear a song and it's Aloha Oi and it's a crying Su-an singing the song. And
so hard. Our tears streaming down her face, down all of our faces. Seong Kyung is also crying. It is, yeah. It is, especially because, you know, and I, when I was watching that moment, she's holding her, her belly, and you know that she's just processing still everything that just happened. That, and for me in that moment, that is when Sung Hwa's death is really getting real for her.
Yeah.
And like, and then now she presumably, you know, my headcanon, she'll adopt she'll adopt Su-on. Because it also, side note, they never make it because they can't get through to her mom, so they never make it explicitly clear. I'm assuming her mom died.
Yeah, I'm assuming her mom died too. You know, but who knows? Because her mom is in Busan, and apparently Busan was able to keep it contained.
But she never tried to call Suk-woo, and when they try to call her every single time, they say the phone's been disconnected.
Yeah, yeah. So who knows? Who knows? And that is the end. We have arrived at our destination, the end of Train to Busan.
All right. Okay, Pablo, while I collect myself, tell me, what's your analysis?
I think this movie's brilliant. And one of the things that I think is brilliant about this film is it makes social commentary on humans and society, where a lot of, almost all zombie films want to, and I think a lot fail because it's a little too... on the nose, a little too preachy. This one doesn't do that. And the best way that it does that is it makes you examine the type of characters that are good and the type of characters that are bad. The type of characters that are good in this and the ones who really do help people are the, you know, the ones that are seen in, at least so I see it, the ones who are seen as the least productive of society. You have the sexually forward girl who in fact is actually really fighting and doing a lot and trying really hard to be this really good person and help survivors, right? You have the two elderly women that you focus on who are seen, who kind of make the choice to be like, fuck this, right? Like one is like, I'm going to die. Like I can't, no need to come and save me. And the other one's like, all these assholes do not deserve to live, right? Like they make those choices for them because they make the best choices for the right characters to live. You have the unhoused man, who was seen as, you know, they, Yeon-suk like humiliate in a humiliating way, says something about him, but at the end is actually lasts a very long time and helps people survive. And then you have Sung-hwa, who is seen as like working class, as like probably kind of like a little rough around the edges, not the brightest, a big like goof and aloof and all that stuff and silly. And then his pregnant wife, who's like, well, when you're pregnant, can you be productive? But they are, all of them are. And then you have this little girl who really is like the thesis of it. Her morality, her innocence also presents the morality. And it's not until someone abandons the like capitalist way of thinking of, and the like individualist way of thinking of myself first, Seok-woo, that the story really changes and things really move in a very positive way. And he actually now has, him and his daughter do have a chance of survival when they start seeing themselves as a community with these other survivors. You know, Yeon-suk does not have that, which is why at the end he kills everyone. He's just as bad as everyone and still does not survive. That's my thing. And that's why I was like, this movie does such a good job with that. And that is why we like these characters. And that is why it really hurts when they do die, but it's such a great film.
Yeah.
What about
you? No, I think, yeah, I, you know, agree with you plus one to everything you said. I, you know, one of the big things that, you know, I wanted to talk about also that you touched on was classes. Like, we deal with different classes of people. So we have the unhoused person who, you know, in that society, you know, they're really solitary, kind of shunned. But then we have all of the different, you know, socioeconomic classes throughout the whole train. And what this comes down to is you can work really hard, you can, you know, be really successful, but at the end of the day, they are just as likely to be killed by the zombies as the unhoused person is.
Oh yeah.
So it's a huge commentary on class and decisions that people make, but ultimately coming back to this theme of community, and just really helping others. And that's something that Su-hwan consistently talks about, like, you're leaving this person behind, like, you're just focusing on saving yourself. And every time people try to just save themselves, it doesn't always work. I will also add, there's a little, this film is a little nihilistic in that, you know, as Elphaba says in Act Two of Wicked, no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah.
And 100%. It is, you know, a lot of times people sacrificing themselves, but they are sacrificing themselves for the greater good, to really be able to help people to move along. And then lastly, there's just this theme of familial love and like not just helping the broader community, but helping, you know, your family and your chosen family, and how these relationships feed in, you know, into our everyday lives. And I just, you know, keep thinking, like, if I was, you know, one of the sisters, if I was a parent, if I was a pregnant woman, like, all of these different, you know,
yeah,
types of people are affected. And like, how do you handle that? And, you know, I definitely do feel like I absolutely would sacrifice myself for people that I love so that they're able to escape. And that's just, you know, the full theme there. And I just, this film is just so good. And
so good.
And then, you know, we've talked a lot on the emotion, but this film's also fucking scary. These zombies are genuinely scary to me.
Yeah.
Because it's so, the makeup design and, you know, the way that they move and the ruthlessness of them.
Is just, 100%.
Just makes this such a good film.
So good. But now, like, going back to a little bit of fun, I just want to know who you biting. No, who you stabbing? Who you biting?
Oh, I think we've already talked about this. Gong Yoo is so fucking hot. So definitely Suk Woo, I think, is the one that I'm biting the shit out of.
Oh, okay.
How about you?
For me, I was like, okay, it's kind of a toss-up, right? Like, it was like Sang Hwa, because I find him attractive in the sense that he's this big, hulking, kind of bad, like, rough guy who really does have this huge heart of gold and is such a lovable character at the same time. And then the other one was Young Gok, because he is so beautiful. Like, what an attractive human being. And he's so nice. But ultimately, I know my type, and my type is I like him a little, you know, athletic, a little rough, a little this. I'm going for Sang Hwa. I'm like,
Is he athletic looking?
He's very muscular. He looks beefy. He looks like a power lifter. You know, power lifters are big. But he's a, what I liked is he's a good fighter. Like, that motherfucker could throw down. And I was like, I like that. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, now it's time for the gay gaze. We have a system to review how accessible this film is to a gay audience. We look at three things. Queer representation: is the queer experience represented within the film? Queer aesthetics: does the film understand the wants, needs, and language of a queer audience? And queer embrace: has a queer audience embraced this film? I think this is going to be a pretty quick section.
Su-on is mother. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, technically she kind of is, like, as a character, like, she's mother, but no.
This movie's not gay at all.
No, not at all. That doesn't mean anything. It's just not.
Maybe one of the sequels. I'm just kidding. I haven't seen there's a sequel to this one that's a prequel, that's an animated film that came out a couple years later. So I actually think I might, maybe I'll watch that this weekend. But I did not see the sequel that came out in 2020. I've heard it's pretty bad.
Yeah, I heard it's not good.
So
But
this film, so good.
All right. Woo. Now, one of our most popular segments, Travel Host or Ghost. Here at Scared Gay, we have a hookup-inspired rating system. It is simple and split into three categories. Travel: are you going to go out of your way for this film to give it an A+? Host: it's good enough. It's pleasurable, but you're not going to go out of your way for it. And Ghost: hard, and I mean hard, pass. It's not memorable, and you'd only revisit in a moment of desperation. Paul, Buy me a ticket because I know what
you're going on that train to Busan.
I'm doing a round trip ticket on a train to Busan, and I don't even give a fuck if there are zombies on it.
I will take that KTX 101 too.
Thank you.
To Busan. Yeah,
100%.
Oh, this is so much fun. All right. Well, listeners, that was Train to Busan. Love this film so much. And thank you all for listening. As always, if you would like to write us a 5-star written review, we will read it live on an episode. If you'd like to follow us, you can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Scared Gay Podcast. If you'd like to follow me, you can follow me on Instagram and TikTok at Paul You Ever Wanted. Pablo?
And I am on Instagram at The Exorcist SF and TikTok at Exorcist83.
Yes. Now, I know that, so maybe we shouldn't mention this at the beginning of the episode, but we were originally, for this episode, episode 70, was supposed to be Fright Night, but we had to move some stuff around. So now, officially, our next episode will be the 1985 classic Fright Night with some of our favorite daddies. With
I'm so excited.
Horror daddies. So,
yeah,
we will have John and Carlos back. Oh, can't wait.
Carlitos and Johnny.
Okay. Well, until next time, stay scared, stay safe, and maybe get a little gay. I'm Paul.
I'm Pablo.
Bye.